What's going on, Atlanta? Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. This is Caleb Johnson, and it's the Dopey Millennial Show. What's going on? It's a fun 4 hours coming up with you guys to hang out on this Tuesday. Not usually with you guys during the week. Feels like I might have some first-time listeners, some people going, who's this guy? I don't recognize this voice. You might know me from doing sports flashes during the week, occasionally popping up on the steakhouse whenever I am summoned by steak during the show. But excited to hang out with you guys for 4 hours tonight, getting into a lot of different things when it comes to the Falcons, who have certainly had a very active day. Some shocking news that we will get into, some things that I wasn't nearly as surprised as what I'm finding out a lot of you have been when it comes to cut down day. The 4 p.m. deadline has finally arrived just a couple hours ago, so we know who will be on the Falcons, at least seemingly so. There could be some changes between now and week one, but we know who is going to be playing for the Falcons week one against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers when hopefully Atlanta gets off to a really positive start. It's been an interesting time for me coming back from, it was a really fun weekend. And, you know, sometimes sports hosts get on here and they get to brag about where they were. And most of the time I am at the age of my life where I don't get to do too many vacations. Like I don't get to often be like Steak Shapiro, who this past weekend, he was like in Boston and Vegas and somewhere else. And I'm like, man, it must be nice. But then there are times when your buddy comes to you and he says, hey, guess what? I want to go see the Yankees and the Red Sox soon. Let's go in a couple of weeks. I'll handle it. You get your flight, you show up, you come hang out, we'll have some fun in New York City. And as someone who has never been to New York City, I was like, yeah, I kind of can't say no to that. So I not only got to watch Yankees Red Sox over the weekend, I also did not have to watch the final Falcons preseason game, which I feel like was quite the blessing, honestly, for those of you who did have to watch that atrocity. It just felt like it got a little bit worse. Week one to week two to week three of grueling football. But we're done with that. It's all in the past now. We don't have to talk about those preseason games any longer. We can finally deal with the roster that has finally arrived. So let's get into all the headlines of the day and of the past few days with the rest of the story.
Now, the rest of the story. The rest of the story.
All right, we will begin with the most pressing issue that has hit the Atlanta Falcons today, which is the news that we kind of knew was coming. Really, we're hoping of, like, please tell me I'm wrong that Caleb McGarry is not going to miss the entire season, but that's where we're at. Caleb McGarry placed on injured reserve today with no designation to return, which means he is going to miss the entire 2025 season. What the Falcons have done so far to address this is traded for Seahawks offensive tackle Michael Jarrell. The Falcons gave up a 7th-round pick in 2027 in order to do that. So you're really not giving up a whole lot. But Jarrell is a guy who started 3 games, which started off with the Atlanta Falcons. And I had a listener hit me up in my mentions today and mentioned a specific sack that happened in that Seahawks game and was like, oh, was Jarrell the guy that gave up that sack? And I was thinking, sir, I'm going to be honest with you. I barely remember what happened last week for me. I am not going to remember a specific sack that happened in, I can't remember what week that was that the Falcons took on the Seahawks. I know it was like midway through the season, but that is where the Falcons' new right tackle, at least for the moment, he'll probably be worked in before he officially gets the opportunity to start. But Michael Jarrell traded from the Seahawks to the Falcons giving up that conditional seventh round pick. I don't think they're done, though, addressing this position. And look, this is going to be something that we'll talk about throughout the show tonight, because I am going to be asking you all, who is the most irreplaceable Falcon in 2025? Yeah, there might be a little bit of a spoiler alert, because we're talking about the fact that you've got Caleb McGarry out for the season. But addressing the position, at least Terry Fontenot has gone out and done it immediately, trying to work in something. We'll see if there is more of a veteran presence that gets potentially added to the roster, because, hey, guys, guess what? Really good offensive tackles aren't just hanging out, chilling, looking for a job this time of year. No, they are on a roster, and they are starting for teams. If they are available, most likely not very good. And having that position shored up is certainly going to be a concern for the Falcons moving forward. And look, I'll be the dramatic one that says it. I think Caleb McGarry being out for the season alters the future of the Falcons and where they can reach this season, because I think trying to replace that position is going to be a season-long venture. It's probably going to come with a whole lot of, crap, like that happened today. Well, he gave up that move. Elijah Wilkinson, who I was calling Elijah Wilkerson earlier, and I was like, that's how irrelevant that I expected that man to be on this Falcons roster in 2025. And instead, he is going to be starting games at right tackle, at least for the immediate future. Like, this is a major concern, obviously, with the fact that not only are you missing Caleb McGarry, but then right after him, you lose Storm Norton for what looks to be 6 to 8 weeks. All right, continuing in the rest of the story, let's go over to the Atlanta Braves, who fell to the Miami Marlins last night, 2-1. But honestly, aren't we at a point where wins and losses don't matter anymore? Who cares? I mean, there are those of you who are very much interested in losing games because you want the increased odds for a better draft pick. And I'm with you. Sure, would love that. However, I do know that the top, I believe it's 4 names that are expected to go in the draft next season in the MLB draft are all shortstops. And guess what the Braves did this past draft? They drafted a whole bunch of shortstops. So I'm not going to pull my hair out over draft stock and that sort of thing heading into this year. But the important thing of last night, and honestly moving forward the rest of the way, is going to be, what do the remaining healthy starting pitchers look like? And I got to say, Spencer Strider last night, 7 innings pitched, 3 hits, 1 earned run. He did walk 2, only struck out 3, but one of those 3 was his 600th career strikeout. He is the fastest primary starter in history to reach 600 career strikeouts. And I think the more important thing from last night was the simple fact that Spencer looked like Spencer Strider. Like, the velocity was in a better field than it has been, especially in his last couple of starts. It's still not in the 100 miles an hour on a consistent basis, which, let's be honest, guys, I don't know that it's ever really going back to that type of he's not going to be that type of guy, I don't think, anymore. But that is something. We'll talk with Gabe Burns, who writes for the AJC. He's actually out in Miami tonight. He's been covering the series for the AJC. We'll talk with Gabe Burns coming up at 6:20 on the show. Get his thoughts about Spencer Strider. Get his thoughts about Chris Sale, because it seems like Chris Sale is getting ready to return maybe this upcoming weekend. And so getting these guys ready and healthy heading into the offseason, I feel like, is as vital as ever, quite honestly, just because this is the time that you want to go into a normal offseason for as many guys as you possibly can. Because guess what? A guy like Austin Riley isn't going to have that. There are going to be so many arms on this roster that are going to go into the offseason rehabbing and not having a normal year. So as many guys as you can have hit the offseason, like Chris Sale, like Spencer Strider, having a healthy offseason, a normal routine before they enter spring training next year, because that's what we're focused on now. We don't need to worry about the Marlins and the Phillies and the whoever is going to hit the roster or schedule next, because, like, sure, it's nice to see a win come across. It's great to see a 4-3 victory the other night that they were able to squeak out. But at this point, 2-1 loss, I'm not sweating it, because, yeah, is the offense having issues again? Been there, done that. That's some more tough decisions for Alex Anthopoulos to make over the course of the offseason. Tonight, game two for the Braves against the Marlins. You do have Hurston Waldrop. He's another one that you need to have as many opportunities for him to pitch the rest of the way, because he's starting to look like a guy that I try not to do the hot take thing. And maybe this being one of the first segments I do during the week, and like I mentioned, you know, having a different audience, this isn't the best thing, but I feel confident saying that Hurston Waldrop enters next season in a higher place on the rotation than Spencer Strider. It looks like that's how he's pitched as of late. Waldrop, in his last start against the White Sox, went 7 innings, 4 hits, didn't give up a run. Waldrop has not given up an earned run in his last 2 starts, and hopefully that continues tonight against the Marlins. All right, coming up next on the Dopey Millennial Show, Caleb Johnson here with you on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Gabe Burns, he covers the Atlanta Braves for the AJC. We'll talk to him next. Coming up, 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. It is the Dopey Millennial Show. Caleb Johnson here with you on this Tuesday evening. The NFL had its cutdown day. 4 p.m. was the deadline of when rosters had to be finalized. Look, there's a lot to get into when it comes to the Falcons, who made the roster, who didn't. We'll debate it all, as well as getting involved in a conversation around who is the most irreplaceable Falcon in 2025. However, before he goes out and gets to cover another very fun, exciting, you know, important, right? Because every game at this point in the season for the Braves is important. But Gabe Burns of the AJC joins us on the WadeFord.com hotline before tonight's Braves and Marlins game. Gabe, how you doing on this Tuesday, man?
Man, you know, I'm good. You know, and most fans around, you know, around the South have kind of shifted into football mode now, right? The Bulldogs are starting, the Vols are starting, Gators, Crimson Tide, whoever your team is. Now the Braves still got another month to play here. I mean,
yeah.
it's been a few years since they've been so much on the back burner. They're about to play the Marlins in the middle game of a battle here for third place in the East, and we have an alarm that's been going off in Marlins Park. You might hear some of it here, which is crazy because usually there's no noise in this place except for the music they blare, because there's like 10 fans in the stands. But so we're dealing with that, so apologies to anyone that has to hear this alarm.
Yeah, hopefully they get that. Hopefully there's no, you know, fire emergency or anything like that going on for you, Gabe. But you and I, we did a TV appearance not too long ago where it was like, we're not used to being at this point of the season and people not talking about the Braves just because, well, we're usually getting ready for the postseason. But given what we saw last night, I feel like that was a big sigh of relief for a lot of fans who saw Spencer Strider go out there, throw 7 innings, and look like at least a version of his former self. What did you see last night from Strider that was different than his previous starts, where he's got, like, I saw something about it, his 15-point whatever ERA was the worst in a singular month in Braves history or whatever it was? Like, it's just, it was obviously bad until last night.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the bottom line was results. Opponents still were getting some hard contact against him. It wasn't as bad in Spurs. He's not getting the strikeouts, but he was getting the ground balls. So with him at this point, it's all about process. And yeah, of course, it was great to see him. It was great to see him get good results again. It had been a while since we'd seen that. And obviously everyone's attention, including his own, is on getting right for 2026. He's talked about there's certain things that I'm going to have to tweak and look at in the off season that I'm just not able to right now between, you know, every fifth day. But yeah, I mean, it was honestly, and against a pesky lineup too, that, you know, can give some, that can work pitch count, give some guys some issues. It was just kind of good to see him just getting results again. Location was better, just executing better. He's mentioned the stuff is getting close. It's improving. Look, there's my take is kind of what I just said, as far as you're not going to see the Spencer Strider that we have all, you know, watched and been banking on being a true number one. I don't think you're going to see that guy until next spring. So the strikeouts are what they are, but I would just say it's good that at this point in the process and with some more starts to go, just to see him distance himself from, you know, those three outings that were just so beyond uncharacteristic and poor for anybody, much less somebody with, you know, of his stature.
Yeah, Gabe, I think the other element for Spencer too is just like it's the between the ear stuff, where I feel like especially recently he's been coming to the podium just absolutely as depressed as he possibly could be, you know, kind of no faith in his stuff, and kind of getting that mentally turned around is certainly something that could make a difference for him in the future. Talking with Gabe Burns, writer of the AJC. He covers the Braves. He's actually down in Miami right now, where hopefully they're getting whatever alarm system they've got handled ahead of tonight's Braves and Marlins game. Hurston Waldrop is going to get the start tonight. He looked really good, Gabe, against the White Sox, and honestly, he hasn't had a necessarily poor start. Even with the Speedway Classic doesn't get to count as a start, but feels like he hasn't really had a poor start since he's come back this year. Obviously very different than what he looked like last year. What are you kind of seeing is his progress and where he can potentially supplant himself for next season?
You know, you mentioned with Spencer the mental element of it, and we've had guys throughout the years here make big leaps, and you don't, it's pretty beautiful because you don't always know when it's coming. Like even in football, like they talk about the jump in year two, right? Like for, you know, a Falcons draft a guy, you have your rookie year two, there's a lot of hype around, you know, what's the jump that he's going to make. And this, you know, with baseball, it's not necessarily, it's not always as kind of linear. And to see, you know, to see a guy like that get his opportunity and to just be in such a good place mentally compared to, you know, kind of what we saw. And he says, like, yeah, I thought I belonged last year. He didn't carry himself like that, like even just listening to him. Now he projects a different level of confidence. It's cool to see. I really go back to the entire mental element of it with him. Like, yeah, obviously the pitch mix is nice. He's a he just the way he carries himself, it's honestly night and day from last year. And so that's, when we talk about Waldrop and what he can be, it starts and ends with that. And I would say he's doing a really nice job positioning himself to be in the back end of that rotation, you know, or at least penciled in entering spring, and we'll see what happens. But you never know. Like, you remember Kyle Wright had early struggles, yeah. And then, you know, once he comes up, he hits. And, you know, he ended up having that great memorable year, and I know injuries have kind of derailed his career, but it really is the type of thing where you just don't know. Even Max Fried, and kind of his progression might have been a little bit more linear, but it's easy to forget how little we've really kind of seen of Waldrop since he's been drafted. So I would just say, you know, we'll see how he finishes the year, but this stretch has just left me extremely encouraged as far as what he can be moving forward.
It's kind of the same thing with Fuentes, where a lot of the times fans see a guy get called up, you know, he kind of gets killed in those first few starts where he gets an opportunity, and it's like, okay, yeah, Let's write him off and forget about him. But as you mentioned, the it's not always linear, their growth. I know Quinn Snyder of the Hawks talks about that a ton when it comes to NBA players, so it's kind of really translates across the board. I want to ask you, looking towards the future, Marcelo Ozuna was a guy that a lot of us, I certainly thought, was going to be traded at the deadline. The Braves decide to keep him around. He then kind of comes back after the All-Star break and looks like an older version of himself, and maybe some of that is kind of cooled down. What do you see as his future on this team? And then similarly, a guy like Raisel Iglesias, who was expected to be traded because you could get something in return for him. Now he enters free agency, but he's been a guy that's pitched really well, it feels like, down the stretch. What do you kind of see as the future of Ozuna and Iglesias with the Braves?
I guess. And things can change, and you don't know based on a free agent's market. So,
sure.
I kind of leave things open for that, of course. But my guess is that Ozuna will not be back. I think that, you know, he showed enough in that stretch. We'll see. I think a team might be more willing to give him maybe a two-year deal. Especially in baseball, the way the free agent market works, I think it would only make sense for the Braves on a one-year pack. And on top of that, you know, we talk about the Murphy, we talk about the Baldwin kind of DH catcher dynamic that it seems like the team is, you know, looking at potentially trying next year. And I just, given where they are, I couldn't see them giving Ozuna a multi-year deal. But if the market was to a point that it was a one-year deal, I mean, I wouldn't rule it out. I would just say it's unlikely. I'd say it's much likelier that Iggy is back, particularly with how he's looked here. I could easily justify, you know, a two-year, I'm spitballing here on the spot, but like something like a two-year, $25 million deal, right? And they don't have a closer for next year. So you have to kind of think about that too. That, I mean, that's a need. They can figure something out with DH, especially they already have something that I think they're going to wind up doing. But they're going to need to add somebody who's another closer option. Maybe Joe Jimenez can step into that role if he's healthy. But again, there's going to be questions there. Same thing, Ronaldo Lopez.
Yeah.
You know, he told Mark Bowman that he wants to keep starting. I'm like, well, you know, I don't know if that's going to be the case or not. If they decided to move him to the bullpen, I would assume that he would be a candidate to close. So there's a lot of kind of possibilities in play here. But to kind of to answer far more succinctly than I just did, I would say it's far likelier that Iggy is back than Marcel.
That's about what I figured. Talking with Gabe Burns on the WadeFord.com hotline. He's a sports and features writer for the AJC. He's covering the Braves right now down in Miami. I'm curious with Chris Sale. It sounds like, especially after his rehab starts, that this is going to be the week. Maybe by the weekend, we'll see him back up with the Braves. It kind of kills things if it is the timeline. I know I saw Mark Bowman tweet out maybe Saturday against the Phillies, which feels like a killer as far as fans who are going to be very much involved in college football. And so maybe they won't get to see if that's when Sale returns. But what are your expectations for Sale as far as that timeline? And then just when he does show up, like, should we expect the guy who was pitching right before he went and fractured a rib, or is this a ramp-up period kind of time?
Well, I think part of it has to be kind of a ramp-up period, but at the same time, he's made some rehab starts now, and, you know, he knows. He knows that he's ready to be back out there. He knows how he feels, and honestly, he's Chris Sale. Like, I wouldn't be surprised at all if he comes out and he winds up looking, you know, exactly like he didn't miss any time, but it's not fair to expect that. I just, you know, given the talent, given the caliber of player he is, this is a really important time for him. And you're right, like, fans might not be locked on to, you know, whether it's Saturday or even the next month. But this is a really important time for him as far as building up, having a normal off season so he can head into spring training and, you know, once again, you know, contend for a Cy Young Award, which he, before he got hurt, he looked very well, like he would be a candidate. And I know the year that Skeens has had, but so there's so much, and we're going to be talking about this all winter and spring, about can the Braves rebound? Like, is this year a sign of things to come, or is this just kind of a blip on the radar? This happens to even really good organizations. Can I turn it around? He is going to be paramount in if they can actually turn this thing around and, you know, get back to what they expect of themselves next year. They got to have, when it comes to him, they got to have him healthy. They got to have, you know, Strider pitching at the level that you expect, and they got to have Swelly healthy. And you put those top three guys, you know, you're topping your rotation with three aces there. That's a pretty darn good starting place.
Yeah, certainly a good place to start, and that you feel good about 2026. That is Gabe Burns. Give him a follow on social media at Gabe Burns AJC. And, of course, always follow his work. Subscribe to the AJC, and you get a lot of good stuff. Gabe, thanks for giving us some of your time heading into tonight's Braves and Marlins game.
Absolutely, dude. Appreciate it.
All right, on the other side of the break, the Falcons made their final roster cuts ahead of the 4 p.m. deadline that hit today. Who made the team that surprised you? Who was cut that shocked you? We'll talk about it next, right here. Caleb Johnson with you on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. It is the Dopey Millennial Show. Caleb Johnson here with you on this Tuesday evening. Coming up about 20 minutes from now, 404-726-0929. I want to hear from you guys. Who is the most irreplaceable Falcon in 2025? Who is that guy on this roster after the 4 p.m. deadline where roster cuts were made that you say, look, the Falcons cannot be without this guy? Who is the most irreplaceable Falcon in 2025? 404-726-0929. We'll take your phone calls coming up in about 17 minutes from now. What I want to get into right now is the simple fact of let's break it down. I mean, 4 p.m. came today. We finally learned. We had heard reports. We got reports over the weekend of some initial cuts that had happened, but we finally found out today after the deadline who actually made this team and who was cut. There were quite a few names on either side of this. Guys who made this roster that I was honestly a bit surprised about, and then guys who were cut that I just did not expect. I'll start with the cuts, where to round out this roster, I really, really thought that the Falcons were in obviously a tough spot because of injuries, trying to make sure they had enough guys at different positions. But the simple fact that the Atlanta Falcons opted for five defensive linemen, which meant Mitch Cutting, defensive lineman Kentavious Street, and Morgan Fox, really, really felt like a head scratcher. Felt like a decision where you hope you can get one or both of those guys to slide through and end up on the practice squad. But given the fact of, and Mark Raimondi was on with Dukes and Bell earlier, and later in the show, we'll let you listen to that interview again, Raimondi talking about the simple fact that there were expectations of rotating the defensive line. Like, Grady Jarrett is not on this line anymore as a regular guy who can stick around for, you know, three plays at a time. Like, you're going to have to be rotating a lot of different guys, a lot of different bodies, and to only end up with five guys on the defensive line, I mean, okay. Like, week one, I hope Tampa's running game is not nearly as good as I remember it, because otherwise that could be a problem. Cutting Kentavious Street and cutting Morgan Fox feels like moves that I'm just asking myself, are you sure, Terry? Is that really the direction that you wanted to go, that you thought would be the best for this roster? Because I don't know. I've got big questions around Street and Fox not being a part of this roster. Then you go into edge rusher Khalid Kareem, who I feel like was a guy that developed over the course of camp, showed himself through the preseason. I'll take your word for it in preseason game number three, because, I won't be that guy who acts like I've watched things when I haven't. And That third preseason game, like, if I was in town, it would have been hard for me to turn that one on. But everything that I had heard, especially in that last one, was Khalid Kareem looked like certainly a guy that I thought would make this roster and ends up on the outside looking in. Safety Jordan Fuller is another name who was a surprising cut, as the Falcons clearly have a bit of a tough situation when it comes to safeties, because they're trying to get guys at other positions. You end up with Xavier Watts obviously was always going to make the roster. Jesse Bates obviously was always going to make the roster. And DeMarco Helms being the other guy who makes the team after not playing last year. So the veteran Jordan Fuller is the odd man out. That certainly is a position where if you do lose a guy, like Fuller easily could be picked up by another team. I don't know that he's really a practice squad option for this team, but certainly you would hope could fall to you and stick around. But teams are certainly going to need safeties. And the fact that Jordan Fuller did not make this roster certainly came as a surprise to a lot of people. The one that I did want to get to, and we'll probably spend more time throughout the show talking about the surprising cuts and then the surprising guys who did make the roster. The one that did not surprise me as a cut but apparently shocked a lot of people is quarterback Easton Stick. Like, yeah, guys, I don't think he's that good that you had to carry three quarterbacks. Now, I heard the discussion that happened earlier where, you know, you're talking about, yeah, what about Kirk Cousins getting traded, though? Okay, you're telling me you cannot get the caliber of quarterback that Easton Stick brings you as an option somewhere else? I mean, I don't necessarily think Ben DiNucci is going anywhere. And Ben DiNucci has just as much experience starting in the NFL, if not more, than Easton Stick. So that's certainly, like, once you get into the territory of, oh, guys, I mean, I really think we needed Easton Stick to make the roster. I really think we're fighting over clearly issues that I don't think are going to make a big difference down the road, because if you are without Michael Penix Jr. and you have traded away Kirk Cousins, guess what? Season's going down the toilet, folks. Like, let's be real. I know that there was a lot of quarterbacks that started in the NFL last year, and a lot of those guys did help their team win games. But if we're talking realistically, I'm just not that shocked that a name like Easton Stick doesn't make the roster, because nothing that I saw, and I was there for preseason game number one. I had some buddies that talked me into, hey, they were Lions fans, and it was like, well, they might not be the real Lions at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, but at least the jerseys are there. And I was like, all right, sure. I saw that game in person. Nothing there impressed me. Now, I wasn't there every day in camp, but I just don't think that was one that I saw a lot of people after that 4 p.m. deadline when it came out that Easton Stick had been cut. We're like, I just don't know what the Falcons are going to do if Michael Penix Jr. gets hurt and then you trade away Kirk Cousins. Guess what? You know what they're going to do? Try to figure out who they're drafting in the top five next year. Like, that's really where the conversation shifts at that point, if we're being honest. All right, the guys who did make the roster that it certainly seemed like were right there on the edge. One name that I was really excited about, because I went on TV a couple weeks ago and hyped this guy up because I love his story. That's wide receiver David Sills. I mean, to be drafted at the age of 14 to USC to play quarterback, and then for all of these years later, you make it in the NFL as a wide receiver. Like, David Sills has had quite the journey where he is going to get to suit up for the Falcons in week one, while the guy that recruited him back in 2014 is coaching for his third team since that point. I mean, it's just been a wild ride for Sills, who ended up going to West Virginia, swapped over as a freshman to play wide receiver, and then ultimately has stuck around with a couple of different teams. He was catching passes just a couple of years ago from Tommy DeVito, who just got cut by the Giants today. So quite the journey for David Sills, but I was happy to see him. But it did come as a shock to a lot of people that the Falcons opted to take seven wide receivers with their initial roster. But there are some big-time injury question marks going on in the wide receiver group, so that's kind of why you end up in a position like that. I think the tight end group being as big as it is, that definitely shocked me. The Falcons are going with four tight ends, where, of course, they were going to keep Pitts and Werner, but keeping Felipe Franks, okay, I feel like that was a bit of a borderline decision. But Tegan Quiterano, like, I'll be honest, I didn't learn this guy's name throughout the entire preseason because I didn't think I was going to have to. I did not, and I know you need special teams players, but certainly when it came to guys who did not make this roster, going with four tight ends that include Felipe Franks and Tegan Quiterano, certainly not a position that I thought the Falcons were going to be in. A couple of names, too, that I know they were drafted just a year ago, and there has been kind of either injury issues or ups and downs in their playing time and all of that. But having Braylon Trice and Brandon Dorlus both make this roster make me slightly concerned for the simple reason of, is Terry Fontenot a little bit too concerned with, hey, I drafted this guy, so I got to see this play out. Like, you just watched the Philadelphia Eagles cut a wide receiver that they drafted last year. Happens all the time. You draft some, and I get it. Third round, fifth round, does not matter to me. If you are not confident in that guy's ability to play meaningful downs for you this season, I was a bit surprised that Braylon Trice, Brandon Dorlus, and you can add one more to it, linebacker J.D. Bertrand, all make the Falcons roster. Clark Phillips was another name that just seemed to slip past and made the cut this time, that certainly was on the bubble. But a lot of decisions had to be made ahead of today's 4 p.m. deadline. And Falcons GM Terry Fontenot certainly making some tough decisions, cutting to some defensive linemen that I did not expect him to cut, and then keeping four tight ends, and then your draft picks from last year that you hadn't even seen anything really much at all out of Braylon Trice, and you keep him around, Brandon Dorlus the same, and then not exactly the most ideal preseason for J.D. Bertrand, and he sticks around. So it'll certainly be interesting to see this Falcons team as they get ready for week one against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. All right, on the other side of the break, who is the most irreplaceable Falcon in 2025? Call us up, 404-726-0929. Mr. Yo, I know you're one of them. You've been dying to talk about it. I got you. 404-726-0929. Who is the most irreplaceable Falcon in 2025? I got three guys that I could swap through, but I want your phone calls. We'll talk about it next, right here. Caleb Johnson with you on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.